This podcast has never had ads or sponsors, thanks to the incredible support from our Patreon community. If you want to support independent space journalism, go to patreon.com/universetoday. What type of planet is the most interesting that we don't have in the solar system? Can we detect an interstellar black hole? Should science journalists report about non-conventional science theories? In our extended Q&A version, will the success of Vera Rubin stimulate building a Northern Hemisphere version of it? It's time for the question show. Your questions, my answers. As always, wherever you are across my channel, if a question pops in your brain, just write it down. I'll gather them up and I will answer them here. All right, let's get into the questions. Seko Buso Jima Iso. What are your thoughts on putting a consumer-grade telescope in space? Would it be worth it? For example, a Celestron 8-inch SCT with a 585 MC, something that people could actually own. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great idea. And there are a lot of relatively small telescopes that are already in space. You know, there are CubeSats that have little telescopes on board that are, you know, designed to do very specific kinds of observations. So this is not a thing that doesn't happen. It's just that the price of putting a telescope in space is very expensive. An 8-inch telescope, it wouldn't fit on just a regular CubeSat. It would have to be on something larger if you're going to have like a bigger camera like that on top of it. You know, you would be looking at the actual satellite would probably cost you maybe $5 million, then the launch would be another $10 million. And so if you're going to launch that, you know, you could buy a 1 meter Takahashi telescope. But there are telescopes that people have used that are designed to fly in space, and so people have, you know, they go with those. So I think, you know, if we get to this place where launches become a lot cheaper, then I think there'll end up being a lot more telescopes in space. I know there are people that are trying to come up with ways that amateurs can take control of a space telescope and, you know, pay for time while they use it to make some observations. So that'd be awesome. But we're just kind of not there yet. You know, right now, anyone who is able to afford to launch a telescope in space is immediately oversubscribed by the scientists that are desperate to use a telescope. And even like an 8-inch telescope would be incredibly valuable to astronomers. And so if you were like, hey, I've got an 8-inch telescope, does anybody want to use it? You'd have a lineup of scientists waiting to be able to use it. And then you're like, yeah, but I really want to just like regular people just like take pictures and have fun with it. And scientists would just be so sad because they could do some science with it. So this will be the challenge until we have too many telescopes, which I don't think is going to happen very soon. No thanks. What is your favorite class of planets that don't exist in our solar system? So the thing that I would like to see is a gas giant that is within the habitable zone with a Earth-sized moon orbiting around us. So, you know, think Endor. So you would have this Earth-like world orbiting around a gas giant. And it would be pretty cool because, you know, it would still be going through a day-night cycle as it is orbiting around the gas giant. Imagine what it would be like to be on the surface of that planet and seeing this giant gas giant in the sky from time to time. I guess it would be all the time because you'd be tidally locked to the gas giant. So from one part of the world, you could just stand there, look up and stare at this crazy gas giant that's filling a huge chunk of the sky. Yeah, that'd be amazing. So I think that's a thing. And these exist, you know, there's a high percentage of gas giants seem to be in the habitable zone of their star. So this is not a totally impossible, unusual event. This is the kind of thing that can happen, is almost certainly out there. And I can't wait till we find one. And so I know David Kipping and team with Cool Worlds Lab, you know, they've got time on James Webb and they're looking for exomoons. But I think that's the dream. The dream is a gas giant in the habitable zone with a planet like Earth as a moon. Eliashar, you keep saying that you believe we are alone, but is there no chance there's life elsewhere that is still not intelligent? Like, I think it's really important to, you know, when I say that I'm, you know, it's my opinion that I think we're alone, it's just because, in my opinion, the thought experiment that I run is that the evidence of there being civilizations out there would be detectable. in the way that humanity has made its existence on planet Earth detectable, right? If you went into orbit and you looked down, you would see cities and you'd be like, huh, something happened there. And that we would see the city equivalent out there across the cosmos in terms of stars. And we don't see that. It all just sort of looks like wilderness out there. But I did not come to that opinion through science. I came to that opinion through, I don't know, logic, reasoning, but that is a pale shadow to actually doing a proper study of all of the stars out there and figuring out whether or not there's life on any of the planets there. Like, that's the hard work. And so the, you know, the real response, my true response is that I am agnostic. I'm ambivalent. I don't know. If we're alone in the universe, or there is a giant galactic federation that's just waiting for us to develop the warp drive. And I think that it's really important when we consider these kinds of questions, especially the ones that are as important and fundamental. Like I think that that's the most profound question we can possibly ask, right? Are we alone in the universe? You know, I'm sure a lot of people have a more theist a profound question. Mine is this, right? Are we the only intelligent civilization in the entire universe, or are there others? Where is everybody? And that, because it's such an important question, it has to be a good answer. Can't just be, I thought about it for a while, or, you know, the argument from incredulity that I can't believe that we're alone. How could we be the only civilization in the entire universe? Is so big. You know, how could we think that? That's crazy. And so either way, what has to be done is we have to gather scientific evidence to find out one way or the other. And that's going to be really hard. It's going to take the greatest telescopes, technologies that have not been invented yet. They have to be deployed on rockets that haven't been built yet, that are exploding in Texas right now. And to get us this, a proper study of these other planets, that we have to do a really comprehensive search for signals from other civilizations. We have to scan the skies looking for megastructures. We have to search for other technosignatures out there, scan the atmospheres looking for chlorofluorocarbons. Like, there's lots of work to be done. We have to examine under every rock on Mars. We have to get under the ice on Europa. You know, that's what it's going to take to find out a proper scientific answer, not just they have to be out there, so I don't need to look because I know they're out there. We need a proper answer. And so, you know, do I think that there could be life out there that isn't intelligent? Of course. Do I think there could be life out there that's intelligent? Of course. That's what I want. That's what I hope, is that we are not alone. I hope that UAPs are real, that aliens are visiting us on a regular basis, but we're just waiting to join the Galactic Federation, that there's life on Mars, there's life on Europa, that there's life at Alpha Centauri. That would be the best. That's what I want. But I can't hope for the outcome and then only look at the evidence that supports that perspective. I have to remain as unbiased as I can in my reporting, and the scientists who are actually doing the work have to remain as unbiased as they can as well. So my gut feeling is that we're alone, but I would not give that any credence whatsoever. It's time to shout out the new $5 patrons and above: Sean Finney, James Kennedy, Fred, Mike Smiley, Evan Pro, Dave Hicks, Jim Valentine, Bob P. Patey, Tel Loopy One, Andrew H. Join the club at patreon.com/universetoday. Alistair Condy, how can we be so special? We don't know. Like, what, you know, if there's a 1 in a trillion chance for a planet to have life form on it, then we will be the only one in 10 galaxies. If it's a 1 in 10 trillion chance, then we'll be the only one in 10 billion galaxies. Like, at a certain point, it could just be that we are the only life form in the entire observable universe. And like, I know, like, that seems weird. That seems wrong. How could we be so self-serving to think that that's true? Well, we don't know the odds. Until we find out the odds, we can't make a decision either way. We should all remain open-minded. Graham W., could you detect an interstellar black hole if it passed in front of a star? I know it would be an absolute fluke to be watching the object at that exact time. So what you would see is a gravitational microlens where the black hole passes in front of a star and distorts the light of the more distant star in a way that we see this sort of flash of light. And this happens. Black holes have been discovered briefly by them passing in front of a star. But also rogue planets have been discovered in this exact same method. And other stars with planets around them have also been discovered using this method. So it's a very precise method. You know, you're watching this star and then something passes in front of it and it acts like a lens and distorts the view to that star and then goes out the other side. And you have to be watching large swaths of the sky to be able to do this. And there's a telescope that has just come online that's going to be doing a lot of this, and that's the Vera Rubin. So these microlensing events are the kinds of changes in brightness that Vera Rubin could detect, although it's fairly rare. You know, it has to be watching at the right time. But the other telescope that's going to be coming online in another couple of years is going to be the Roman Space Telescope. That launches in 2027. And it's probably going to find hundreds of rogue planets through that microlensing event. But really, anything that is changing the brightness of stars in its field of view should be found. And this method of microlensing is the way that astronomers have been trying to search for primordial black holes. So we know that there are stellar mass black holes, and we know that there are supermassive black holes. But the question is, are there smaller black holes, the kind of thing that are left over from the formation of the universe? And they could be of any mass. And we don't know that they exist. And like, they could be one explanation for dark matter. And so the way that astronomers are trying to find out if they're out there is to look for these microlensing events, that you look at a giant field of stars, and then you just count the number of times that a black hole of the right mass passes in front of a star, and then that gives you a sense of how many of these black holes there could be out there. And now it looks like, you know, astronomers have not seen these microlensing events from smaller black holes. And so it means that if they are out there, they're either sort of too small to cause a significant lensing event, or that they're too massive to happen very often. Like maybe they're 1,000 times the mass of the sun, or they're the mass of an asteroid, but they're not in between, because if they were, then we would see a lot of these lensing events of stars in the field of view. Motion theory. Should science journalists explore radically new frameworks like motion theory, which sees the universe as structured motion loops, or stick strictly to mainstream views? So it's interesting that the name of your channel is Motion Theory, and then the thing that you're posting in your comment is about this motion theory. And so, no, for me as a science journalist, I am unequipped to decide whether or not your specific theory is worth reporting on. I am ill-equipped. I'm not a scientist. I'm just a journalist. And so if I report on every single person who tells me about their theory for the universe, you know, they've solved dark matter, they've solved dark energy, they've falsified the Big Bang, they've developed a warp drive, I get probably 10 emails a week from people who have proposed a theory and are choosing to go directly to science journalists like me, as opposed to going the route that will get me to report on the news, and that is through a science journal, right? Because like I said, I am not a scientist. And so I don't know whether what you're talking, you know, whether your theory is correct or whether your theory is something that has all kinds of, you know, very basic flaws that a physicist or a cosmologist would be able to look at and go, oh, you know, here's your mistake. You forgot to account for this, or this is, you know, what you're suggesting is a thing that we have already looked for and we haven't found. And I'm sure the fact that you're bringing this up on a YouTube channel as opposed to publishing in a science journal is that you haven't been able to get it accepted in a science journal. And the reason is, you know, often because for the science journals, they require you to be with an existing institution. So with NASA or with a university or with some kind of research group that has credentials that people have done, are able to then publish to the journals. And it might feel like it's gatekeeping, right? That people are like, you know, why don't you just publish anything, right? Cool ideas can come from anywhere, and they can, absolutely. But again, if the journals publish everything that everybody sends them, and most of it is super duper wrong, then what is the value of the journal? So the journal has to have some kind of way that they decide what does and doesn't get published. And so, you know, you're going to find, if you try to reach out to journalists like me, there's nothing we can do, right? Like, I can't report on your research, because I would have to be capable of peer reviewing your research, and I can't. So I will report when other people have peer reviewed your research, and, you know, and find it compelling, right? Other scientists, but I can't do it myself. And so I won't. And so if you think you've done meaningful work that is going to be really useful to humanity, then take the time and go through the proper channels. Go to the journals and get your work published in the journal. And if the journals tell you that you have to be part of a research institution, then become a part of a research institution. And if a research institution says you're going to need a degree in theoretical physics before you can become part of our research institution, then get a degree in theoretical physics, right? Like if this is important to you, then you've got to follow the channel, follow the methods, the way all of the other scientists do. And then if you, as you learn more and more, and if your idea still feels compelling to you, and now you have access to better tools, and now you have access to other scientists that you can talk to, and you can coordinate your research with them, and you start to make these connections, you start to bring on collaborators, then this gets really serious. And who knows, you might have a Nobel Prize winning idea there. But until you go through the right channels, you're not going to be able to get anybody to take it that seriously, unfortunately. So good luck, but I can't help you. Did you know that you can watch the same video with no ads and get a bonus question over on Patreon completely for free when we call it Q&A Plus? And this week's bonus question, will there be a Northern Vera Rubin? I'll put a link in the show notes. All right, those are all the questions that we have this episode. So thank you, everybody, who put your questions into the YouTube comments, and everybody who joined me for the live show, which we did last week at 5 p.m. Pacific time. Now, we are on our live stream hiatus, so I'm not going to tell you when the next one is going to be, except it's going to be in September. But we've got lots of other cool stuff happening here on the channel over the summer. I'm going to chat about, you know, the crisis in media, but first, I'd like to thank our patrons. Thanks to Abe Kingston, Andrew M. Gross, Bradley Griffin, Brian Bodie, Caradwin, Chuck Hawkins, Commander Bialok, Cy Nielsen, David Gilton, David Matz, Dustin Cable, Evan Pro, Greg Feely, Hudson Moore, James Clark, Jeremy Mattern, Jim Burke, Jordan Young, Marcel Smits, Michael Purcell, Monzo, Paul Robach, Rink Kaidu, Robeck, Sean Sargent, Stephen Fowler Munley, Vlad Shiplin, and Wolfgang Klotz, who support us at the Master of the Universe level. And all our patrons, all your support means the universe to us. So there's been an interesting video that's been going around the YouTubes recently by a video essayist called Jarrett Moore. And his video is called Cultural Nihilism and the Rise of the Grifter. And it's kind of a takedown on, content as content, which is what a lot of the platforms are pushing people towards. And just this idea that either it's going to be absolutely amazing or it's going to be super cringe. And either way, you are drawn to and compelled to watch this and less compelled to watch the stuff that's kind of in between. And the social media platforms have a really hard time distinguishing between those. And so they will drive you to either stuff that's incredibly cringe or stuff that's awesome. And we are losing agency for curating what it is that we watch. And, I think you can always just complain about media, kids these days, it's fine. Sure, I agree with, all of the stuff that he is complaining about on the various content media platforms. You should watch the video. But I think at the very end, the point that he makes is the one that I really totally 100% agree with, and that is that we have to take control of our curation. And I talked about this last week about the need to go back to an RSS feed. Don't get your media from social media. Don't sit there and scroll on TikTok and hope that the stuff that you love is going to show up at the cadence that you expect. You have to curate it. And as an old man, back in my day, we would tune in to television shows at certain times. We would read specific books based on the recommendations of our friends. We would buy a CD of music that we enjoyed because we'd seen the band or because that we had read a review of it or someone had recommended it to us. And we're moving away from that. And especially now with the rise of artificial intelligence, we're moving into this place where you're going to just have this content stream curated at you by an algorithm for as much time as you're willing to throw at it. And your time is just going to feel more and more meaningless. And you're just going to while away your days on this algorithmic slop. And so now is the time to practice the habits of curation. And so, you know, this is a thing that I'm doing more and more. We've talked about this quite a bit. Like, don't just refresh your YouTube screen. Go to your subscriptions tab. Find recommendations for shows that you really like, and then subscribe to them. And then subscribe to them in ways that you can ensure that their content always reaches you. Like, if they have a podcast version of what they do, follow the podcast. If they have a website, check the website. If they have an RSS feed, subscribe to the RSS feed, right? Follow them on Patreon, you know, especially if they have a free version, or if you want to support them. Subscribe to their newsletter, their email newsletter. Go directly to connect with the kinds of content that you really like, and be really intentional about how you spend your time and the things that you follow, because this is just going to get worse. This is going to accelerate. And I think there's a whole generation of people out there who are not prepared for what is coming at us. And so we want to practice these skills and push back against the algorithms that are trying to just decide how you spend your time. Or do whatever you want. I'm not your dad. All right. We'll see you next time.